Hey there, welcome to the Creative Grasshopper Podcast. I'm Laura Jones, and I'm going to be bringing you motivational and inspirational interviews with authentic entrepreneurs about how they manage their business and time so you can learn how to run your business in an authentic way and create a flexible productivity system that works for you. Hallie Gray is our very first guest on the show. Hallie is the founder and marketing strategist of Evolve and Succeed. She helps freelancers and business owners get booked out in advance because life is so much more fun when you don't have to worry about money. She gives some awesome advice in today's episode, so go ahead and listen to it. But if you want more details about her and today's show, including worthwhile tweetables, be sure to check out the show notes at lauragjones.com/CGP1. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Creative Grasshopper Podcast. Why don't you tell us about yourself and your business? What's your story?
I'm Hallie Gray, and I run Evolve and Succeed, and I help people level up their marketing so that they can get booked out with clients in advance.
Well, that is really cool. And that's a great elevator speech, I have to say. So how did you come to doing this? I hear you have quite a long journey.
Yeah, I mean, I think for everybody, finding their successful business idea takes quite an evolution.
Oh, yeah.
I started knowing I wanted to run a business, and then I started experimenting to figure out what that business would be, and it started with, like, making physical products like handbags from vintage kimonos, and then I realized I didn't like sewing that much, so that got kicked out the door. And then I had a couple other of phases in my evolution with different businesses and just trying to figure out if I liked it or if I thought it would work. And that whole time, I kind of been giving marketing and business advice to my friends, and it was really paying off for them. So I opened up Evolve and Succeed as my new business, and I booked out my first service quickly, I think in the first week.
That's awesome. How did you make that happen?
The key difference was, instead of trying to make something that I really wanted to make, which is always fun, and there's a way to market that, is to instead listen to the people I was talking to who were other new freelancers at the time, and taking what they're saying and what their problems are and what their, like, big dreams are, and seeing how I could help them get there. So at that time, I offered them a Quantum Leap pack, which was basically me just going through their website and being like, okay, well, as a new user, as a new person reading your blog, like, it doesn't make sense. This, like, you know, you're missing a newsletter sign up here. I think you would get more clients if you wrote something here. Here's some content ideas. So it's like a full website assessment for their business.
Well, that's a brilliant idea. It gives them right what they need from the perspective of someone who knows and who's, you know, looking at it from the eyes of a client.
Mm.
So I think a lot of creative grasshoppers, when they first start, they don't really know where to find these people. You know, they hear, talk to your customers, listen to your customers, but they're not sure exactly where to find them and how to approach them and how to get that information from the customers. So what would you recommend for that, and what did you do for that?
Well, I think the problem is that everybody talks about an ideal client, including myself. And what that means, it seems to be like a person of imagination, like your ideal boyfriend or girlfriend. And that's not actually the case, because like many things, if you get too wrapped up in a fantasy, it never actually becomes real. So what I would say is that you're already talking to people who are your ideal clients. You're already talking to people who are your ideal customers in your day-to-day life. So now you need to figure out which one you would actually like to work with and which one you would actually like to help and how you could help them. So it's a real person that you know. And just writing out, like, just on a piece of paper, their name, their age, what their problems are, what they really want from life, and just kind of getting a deeper perspective of who they are and seeing the world from their shoes will help you write your copy and create your services and stuff. It's actually it's the best tool you can have.
So that sounds really great. Yes, I have heard of a lot of people, especially starting out with like a passion they had or something like that as their niche or their initial starting client. I'm guessing that is that kind of what you're talking about, or are you hinting at something bigger?
there's people who actually successfully like stumble into their niche and their business like from the get-go. And there's people who like have a great idea, but they haven't taken the time to think about who this would actually help in their current like in their current circle of friends or people they talk to online. They haven't thought about who they could actually get it in front of, or you know, attract the right people. And it's usually because they're not actually thinking like that person. They're thinking like themselves, and they're thinking, oh, how can I sell this? And really, selling only happens when you start to develop like a connection with somebody and start to see it from their perspective and see how that you can make their life better.
So make friends first, clients later, right?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
That's a great idea. So Hallie, I heard that you had a very important achievement recently about your waiting list.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have now quite a few people on my waiting list. So it's pretty exciting. It's pretty cool. It was a unexpected but awesome thing to see when you check your MailChimp list.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, Hallie is now booked out 6 months in advance.
Mm-hmm.
You are also a booked out coach, right? So what do you, what are like your top tips for getting people booked out?
So I don't do, when my clients try to come to me with emotions, when they want to talk about how upset they are or how they're panicking about their launch, I can't help them. And so we go back to the data, because really what you need is to figure out a number or to figure out an action plan to focus on, and not feelings, is my perspective, especially when it comes to business. So when it comes to figuring out how to get booked out, the first step is definitely figuring out the number of clients you need. So you might actually only need like 2 clients a month to reach either an income goal or for you to feel like this business is worthwhile. Or you might figure out that if you sold like a 3-month program and you had 5 people sign up, you would be booked out for those 3 months. And you also need to calculate in your personal life stuff. So that's another thing that people overlook, is that if you had those 5 clients, you know, would you have enough time to, you know, develop your romantic relationships, or, you know, make sure that your clothes are washed. So it's actually quite important to come up with the number so that you can aim for it and hit it, and also so that you can make sure you keep sane. And once you've done that, you can start telling people about it and be like, I've only got 5 spots available for the next 6 months, because people forget that everything is limited, time, services, resources. So you need to remind them that this is a limited resource and if they want it, that they should buy it now, because it might not be available later.
Absolutely. And I love the washing your clothes part.
Yeah.
I definitely see it in a lot of my clients, and there's so much anxiety around, oh my gosh, I got these clients, I gotta do this. And then you sit down and you realize, whoa, what do I really need? And it's very kind of calming just to know, okay, this is what I need. It's a lot more gettable when you have sort of a number and you can see it. So what's the next step?
So once you have a number and then you start telling people about your number, it would be basically writing content all around it. So we'll talk about content. Content is really marketing. So when you're writing, you're marketing. And basically what you need to think about is, what are the obstacles for people when it comes to buying your service? Like, if you're brand new, is it establishing trust? If it's a new service, what questions might they have around like how it works? What are the results? And then they want to see if it actually works. So they want to know, like, did it work for other real people? What am I actually expecting from this? Is it accurate for you to be selling it this way? And, in your sales page as well. So a sales page is really important, because it is a make or break for a lot of people. If you have great copy and they go to your sales page, that'll cut off a lot of your sales. So I'm going to be working on making something around that this month.
Yeah, I've heard whispers about that.
Yeah. I was like, I really should do this, and I really want to, because sales pages are so much fun to write and help people with, and they, once you get them right, like, it's magic, because it's cool, because a lot of my clients will work together on our sales pages, and then they'll be like, I woke up today, and usually, like, when it comes to getting clients, I have to, like, you know, do that consult call, and then I have to like talk to them, and it takes a bit of time to convert them. And they're like, I woke up today and that sales page just converted like 3 people into clients, and I haven't ever talked to them, and they've already put their money down and they've paid in full.
Oh, that is a dream.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, it's so cool to see how like words are amazing. They're so powerful.
Yes. It's more than words, I think. It's literally like emotions, like, you know.
Yeah.
Identifying with someone wakes up in the middle of the night and putting that on paper and mm-hmm. offering a solution. And it's pretty straightforward, but a lot of people don't do it. But yeah. I love this. I love this, the sales page thing and everything. So, but I want to go back to the part of content, for just a little bit. But first, I want to ask you, so what is like kind of your, you know, number one tip? Like if you could meet a newbie entrepreneur and tell them, dude, if you don't do, like, if you do any, nothing else, at least do this for your sales page. What would that be?
Oh, good one. I would have to say big red buttons, and I even wrote like a tutorial on how to do it because a lot of people, their buttons are like, so red is the colors, like in terms of, they've done studies because marketing is really just experimenting with your words and how you set up your uh-huh. stuff. They've done studies and they say a red buy now button or an orange one, gets people clicking a lot more than any other color. So a big one, because the more obvious it is, the easier it is for people to buy.
Right.
And you want to have your price right above it. So people usually like hide the price. They hide the button. They make people like work for it. And I would tell you not to do that. Just like have your red button intervals in your sales page so that people get used to the idea of buying from you and it's easy. You just want it to be as easy as possible for people to give you their money.
Well, that's perfect. And I love hearing that you support the putting the price on the pages, which I'm also a big fan of.
Mm.
What's behind that for you?
I've done a lot of research, and the reason why people need to put their price up there, and not like, by the way, when I say price, I mean literally just your price, and no like disclaimer or, you know, people tend to get apologetic about their prices, and that should never be the case. It should just be stated. Because when people know the price, they can understand the value better. So people work with me and they see the price and then they can compare that to the value of the benefits of what I'm giving them. So how much would you pay to get booked out in advance? And then they can kind of put a price number around that and see the return of their money. So like you put money in, how much money do you think you're going to come back out? If they don't know the price that they're paying, it's intimidating because it's like that fancy restaurant you go to where they never have prices on the menu. And then you just order the green salad and it's $30. Like,
I hate that.
Yeah, I know. And you don't know what to expect. And you're like, this is shit. Like, why?
I know, right? Oh, they come and tell you the specials. And then you order one, it's like $50. You're like, oh, crap.
No, the dude at the dinner party, he's just a $50 special. Oh, no.
I know.
Exactly. So it's, you don't want to make people work for it. And it's like having them jump through a hoop that's unnecessary. I've seen people do it. And maybe it works for them, and maybe I'm not their ideal client, which is something that you also need to consider. But personally to me, it feels very aloof and standoffish in terms of, you know, being, you know, letting people know straight up what your prices are.
Yes. My husband is a ballroom dancer.
Cool.
So I know a lot about ballroom studios, and at many of them, the old school styles, you go there for a free session and then they kind of lock you in a room and they spend like half an hour trying to convince you to buy like a $10,000 package. But they don't put their prices on their website, and if you call and ask, they usually avoid saying their prices. So I look at it as kind of like that strategy. Like, it's old school. It's, you know, sort of like kind of trying to get people in the door first and then squeezing them to get their money. That's not cool, because I don't think your clients will be nearly as, you know, good of a fit for you then.
I totally agree. And I find that sometimes, so I've done in the past experiments with sales calls, 15-minute sales calls. And I noticed that because I've been on the end, the receiving end of a sales call, and someone didn't give me any custom advice. They took up my time, and then they just spent half of the time pitching me their services. And at the end of it, I felt used and abused. Like, why did I even say yes to what was supposed to be like a free call to help me out? So
yeah,
personally, in my own, if I do consult calls, if I do them, I usually spend the whole time being like making it a session in which I'm like, all right, here's what you need to do. Here are your tips. Here's how you can.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. And usually at the end of it, I'm like, if you want to work with me, feel free. If you don't, that's fine. But personally, I want to be one of those people who just makes other people's lives better. So if I make money, I make money. If I don't, I don't.
Yes, I agree. And I think that I call that feeling like a wallet with a face.
Cool. I like it. Good.
And I do the same with, you know, free consults. I just give a lot of help, and then at the end I'm like, so do you want more help?
Yeah.
But I find that a lot of people, they've had those bad experiences, and then they're leery of getting on new calls. So I wanted to jump back now to the content issue. Yeah. A lot of creative grasshoppers are, you know, they have a lot of passions and they kind of get bored. I'm the same way. I can't write about the same thing. Like, I'm a productivity coach, but I write about authentic business and all kinds of things. I can't just write around one thing. So what advice would you have for those people so that they still kind of put their clients, you know, keep their clients in mind and their sales in mind, but don't bore themselves into writing about the same thing?
Yeah, I definitely have a short attention span as well, and so I can totally understand where that comes from. And I think you should write on a diversity of subjects that help you and help your clients get through it, you know, because businesses are tough, and they're not just one aspect. They're usually multiple aspects to get you to a level where you want to be. But what I do, and personally how I run my business, and I'm not sure if it's right, but it's working for me, is that I'm very launch-focused. So for me, my business is based on launches. So I'll do all my content upcoming to a launch around topic of the launch. And then for the rest of the time in between launches, I'll write whatever I want, like whatever I want to be inspired about.
That is a great idea.
Yeah, it helps me personally focus because I need a goal and a deadline. I'm a natural procrastinator usually. So for me
to join the club.
Yeah. Well, you know, it never seems important. But if I have that launch deadline in my head and I'm like, all right, I've got a sales goal, I've got like a certain number I want to meet, like, to me it helps keep me focused, and it helps me structure everything I'm writing about easier.
Well, that's a great idea. I think a lot of creative grasshoppers struggle with this too. They're procrastinators and they can't really do without a deadline. So how what is your launch strategy? I'm curious to know.
When it comes to selling something, like, I really enjoy sales and marketing because it's basically experiments with language. But,
yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. That's why I did university, or I did college in, languages and science. So to me, that suits me really well. But,
that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun. But, launches, how I approach a launch would be something like, I send out a lot of free high quality content usually before a launch, and I'd like to experiment because I've experimented with a couple of different launch techniques. So if you bear with me, it's a little bit of.
Oh, I am all ears.
Okay. All right. So I've tried short launches where I've created, 3 services and I launched them. I launched the sales pages, like a sales page for each one. I put out there and then I sold on the first day. So like for me, a short launch would be like you create it the day of.
Nice.
You put it up, you tell people about it on social media and people who are interested in your newsletter. And then that can be a launch.
Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Exactly. And so I've done launches that are like that, or 72-hour launches that are like that. And I sold like 9 out of 10 spots.
Great.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. I love it. It's very adrenaline. Focus.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then I've done longer launches, which actually I don't enjoy as much, but longer launches allow you to hit more people who are not as action-oriented. So somebody who is a little bit more conservative when it comes to risk or their money, you can send out blog posts, every week, a few at a time or one at a time or a couple, and you do it all around the launch. So if I was going to do it for the sales page workshop or product I'm going to make, it would be about like how sales pages work, what you need on them, the sales page results I've gotten for my clients and the differences before and after, the top 5 things you need around sales pages, or the top 5 things a successful sales page has, how to create those big red buttons, which I've already done, but I could do it again. So, and then at the end of each one, having a call to action. And so that's an extended launch for me, having that much content before it, but that also works really well. So there's actually no formula for launches.
Well, that's, I love that last one though, because I think a lot of people, they think of launches as something, I come up with and then I make it, and it's sort of all under wraps. Like, it's sort of all kind of hidden, or I announce it once, But I don't think many people think of kind of combining their content strategy with their launch strategy. So during this entire time that you're writing posts, are you mentioning the package you're creating or no?
Yeah, I'll either have them, either just telling them like in a coy, not coy, but like in a way like, hey, this is the sales page workshop I'm working on. These are my 5 tips for sales pages. So I'll keep them involved in the whole process and I'll be like, hey, you know, this is coming out tomorrow. Here's what I recommend for you for your sales pages. And then I'll do something like a free workshop or webinar, which I did for, I think I did a sales page one for the launch of my League of Business Badasses, which is my 6-month program. And,
Yeah,
it was fun. And, so I worked with people for like an hour on their sales pages and we did like examples and I had like a worksheet and stuff. So by having like really high quality content coming out around your product or your service, it helps people feel comfortable buying from you because they're like, oh wow, she's going above and beyond. There's a lot of marketing people out there who do a lot of coy marketing from my perspective. Like they dance around the subject and then they use marketing to make you really, really want it, but not rationally. Like marketing can be like a sales aphrodisiac. Like people can get really excited about something and spend money and then be regretful. Like, you know, it's that last, you know, impulse purchase. So it's possible to do that, but that's not, in my mind, 100% ethical.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what I recommend for my clients is just being as open as possible about how, but still, you know, helping people understand, like, this is going to lead to, you know, more money or making you happier or making your life easier or giving you spiritual peace, whatever that angle is for their ideal client. And helping them understand that that's what's going to happen once they buy this product or the service. So marketing is really just about helping people understand how you're going to make their life better.
Yeah, Hallie, I think a lot of marketers who use that then have those clients who just like afterwards have second thoughts. Mm-hmm. I remember reading that about that, and it was kind of a surprise to me when I first read sales strategies. Like, you know, oh, make sure you send your client a lot of stuff afterwards to kind of anticipate second thoughts. And when I got my first client, she actually didn't, like, get back to me for the next few days. And during that entire time, I was just freaking out, like, oh, my God, is she going to quit? Oh, my God, is she going to quit? So yeah. What kind of strategies do you have to make sure that clients don't, you know, don't have second thoughts or don't just say, hey, I changed my mind?
I'm a big proponent of allowing people to change their mind. I've been in my own self situations in which I've bought something because I've been persuaded by marketing or like the content they put out and then felt dissatisfied by it. And from a client perspective, the best thing they could have done is apologize and give me my refund. So personally, when my clients, because I'm not perfect, and so I've either, you know, with my sales pages or something, I've gotten a couple of imperfect clients, not as people, because they're great people, but the work relationship didn't work right. And so what I did was refund them and tried to make them as happy as possible, give them their money back, updated my sales page, because every time you have a client that doesn't work, that's great data. It's not failure, it's just an improvement. So I update my sales pages, I include content to make sure that I get, you know, people come in with the right expectations because I want them to be happy and successful. And if I can't do that for them, then I need to bow out gracefully and make sure I don't impede that at all.
Well, that is a wonderfully graceful strategy. I mean, oh my goodness. But let me ask you something. I think that must be really hard for a lot of us. I mean, I know personally, I still find it hard when I have a lot of people like unsubscribe following an email that I send. And as much as I try to think, oh, you know, it's all a blessing, like other people will come, they weren't the right fit, really a part of me is thinking, oh, they rejected me. how do you deal with that? I mean, how do you deal with that so gracefully and so well? How have you brought yourself to this point?
Well, I mean, the unsubscribes, it's harder because people you don't know, you feel like you've lost fans, raving fans, but it could just be people like who subscribe for, I don't know, freebies, who didn't actually want anything, or people who no longer do business. So,
yeah.
But when it comes to one-on-one clients, like I had a client who wanted someone who was more into the feeling side of things. I 100% agreed and totally was behind her. And I was like, let's get you your money back. Let's figure out a way forward. Can I recommend anybody? These are the people I know who do something like what I do, but with emotions. how can I help you get the right person on your side? And they really appreciated that, and they actually are still a client, but just for the marketing stuff.
Wow, so, that is really nice. See, a lot of people try to work with everyone.
Yeah. I understand that, and especially if you're desperate for money, I can understand that mentality as well. It's hard to lose somebody. Please. But I think one of the crucial parts of a client relationship, client coach, or whatever client strategist relationship is that if the client comes to you with difficulties or doesn't want to work with you anymore, that's actually the biggest, most defining part of a relationship, because if you can overcome that well, that's like a bonding moment, and that's a moment that they'll remember, because you want people to remember you and feel good when they think about you. And I've actually found that if you handle that really well, those people become kind of like loyal fans, and they feel like they can, you know, they'll either work with you later, or they feel like it's just like there's undying loyalty there or something. I don't know, but to me, it's kind of like a pivotal moment where you actually show your true colors. Because up to that point, they're giving you money, right? So you're going to be really nice to them. But once the money is out of the equation, how are you going to treat them? Are you going to treat them like human beings? Or are you going to just treat them as a, you know, a jammed ATM?
That is awesome. And it's so, I think it's so counterintuitive for a lot of people, but it makes sense, right? Because they just trust you then, and they know that you have their best interests at heart.
And the thing is, as well, is that we're not perfect either. And I am still evolving as a business, I did have like a get yourself your first client package. And I didn't realize, and this is something that I've come to realize, is that there's a lot of people out there who want their first client, but haven't figured out what their business idea is yet. So I started working with people who are like that. And I realized that I was out of my depth, because I don't help people come up with their business idea. I help people sell that business idea. And so I had to refund money or offer additional services or additional support to help them. To help myself feel like I've actually helped them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important from both sides, to act with integrity and to make sure that you're doing your best, putting everything you've got out there to help people out, because they trust you with their money and their time. And most importantly, their business, which is kind of like their token for a better life.
Well, that is really a great perspective, because I think a lot of us, we're good at many things, and I've heard this before, sell them what they need, sell them what they want, give them what they need. So a lot of people, they like claim they will work on some things, but they will work on a lot of different things related to that. And I understand there's always a little bit of leeway, but I love how, you're saying no to something that is somewhat related to marketing in the end, figuring out the message and everything. So how have you come at this, these kind of boundaries for yourself about what you work with people on and what you don't? I think that's really important for many creative grasshoppers who feel, well, I could help people with anything.
Failure is a great teacher. And
yes, it is.
It's an amazing teacher. And if you don't learn from it, you're actually a bad student. And it happens to everybody. I think the most important part for me was that I did want to help people get their first client, but I literally could not help them figure out if they should be a copywriter or a web developer or, a marketing person. Like, I couldn't make that decision for them. If they had picked a direction, I could help them. But unfortunately, every week it was a change in direction. And that's normal. That's 100% normal for people starting their business. But then, I like to work with people personally that get the best results from my work. So people who are cool with no emotions being in this relationship. We have someone who's focused on data, someone who gets shit done, and someone who's willing to experiment and be flexible and make the most of the time we have together and really try. So I think what happens is that, I've offered different services, and as I've been offering these different services, I've started to get more awareness and understanding of what works and what doesn't. And that's why I think refunds have to be part of people's policy, because you're going to get yourself into a situation where you think you're fine, and then you find out either you don't like doing it or the client's not getting results. And to be honest, if that's the case, then that's something that you shouldn't probably be offering.
That's a great perspective, because it's flexible, and I think a lot of people, they want to have everything laid out ahead of time. You can't.
Yeah.
You got to go in it and learn as you go and roll with the punches.
Definitely. And the other thing I find is that, like people who are also multi-passionate, I guess is the other word for those creative grasshoppers,
yes.
Although that's a good phrase that you're using.
Thank you.
Is that they want to do everything at once. And although I like to do many different things and I find myself to have a diverse range of hobbies and, you know, interests, I chose one thing because it helps keep your mind focused and it actually relieves a lot of stress that comes with doing many things. So what I would recommend is people, and I know this is scary for creative grasshoppers, is to pick one thing to do for your business because that's going to make your life a lot easier. And also running a business is a multi-interest activity. Like I've got to learn about accounting. I've got to do admin stuff. I've got to be the marketing person as well as the strategist. So really running a business is a creative grasshopper endeavor.
Absolutely.
And it's going to make your life a lot easier if you choose to do like focus in on one business idea and then see how that evolves instead of trying to do all five at once.
Right. Then you'll still have a lot of other different things to learn and to master and to juggle at the same time.
Yeah, precisely.
I think that's great. It's like giving yourself an anchor.
Yeah, and it makes your life a lot easier. And also, from my perspective, for marketing, it makes it easier to sell stuff.
Oh, I bet. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. That's how I came to this productivity thing, too. I was all over the place, and this kind of narrowed it in. So I remember you talking about failure being a great teacher. Mm-hmm. I actually love to talk about failure, and I even have like a freebie workshop on, how to learn from failure. So mm-hmm. I want to ask you,
cool.
What strategies do you use in order to learn from your failures?
Well, if it's a launch, I like to launch and see if it works or not. And so I've got certain in my head or just gut feeling a certain criteria for a launch to see if it works or not. And so I've put out quite a few launches and the majority of them have sold well, but there's a few that haven't. And so what I do is just do some. So a couple of mine that didn't do well were because I launched them in November and December or October and November. I can't remember which. And the reason why they didn't do well, I found out from talking to other people who were ahead of me and getting a mentor, is that because my market is American people and they're spending all their money on gifts during the Christmas or Hanukkah period, so they're not going to put money into business expenses or business development.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that was a big learning curve, and that was a big, like, there was two launches there that failed and got no sales because of that. So personally, like, if I fail, if a client comes to me and says this working relationship isn't working, and then they, you know, tell me why, and I take a look at what they're saying and I take out all the data there, I can take that and say, all right, well, it looks like in my sales copy, I'm not saying enough that, you know, I don't deal with emotions. It looks like in my sales copy, I'm not saying like you need a business idea first. So what I'll go and I'll update those things so that people are aware of those are the requirements, and then that way I can start adding in those details so that it kind of helps filter out the right sort of people into buying my services.
So basically, I was to kind of break it down, it would be know what you want, and when you kind of, you know, go sideways or don't quite get to it, then analyze exactly what went wrong and fix it.
Yeah, precisely. Or just learn from it, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I think a lot of people tend to blame themselves instead, and spend a lot of time doing that or wondering what went wrong instead of taking it in this very experimental, analytical way, which I love. It's a great way to kind of separate yourself from your emotions, which is very important sometimes in business. So
I find
I love it, that you do that.
Yeah, and I find it to be one of the most important things, because personally as a business owner, I do encounter a lot of emotions when it comes to running a business, especially if I'm, you know, last year I was struggling financially, and that caused a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress and a lot of self-doubt. So it's not that the emotions aren't there on my side from a business running perspective, but the reason why I could turn that around and now be booked out 6 months in advance is I kept moving forward, and I kept having people, you know, I kept trying to remind myself, this isn't about how you feel. your business doesn't succeed or fail based on how you feel. Like if you feel happy or sad, it succeeds based on the actions you take.
That is a great reminder for everyone to keep in mind. And I think especially multi-passionate people, they tend to run with their emotions a lot. And it's very important to kind of separate them from your business. So listeners, keep that in mind. A lot of wisdom today from Hallie. So I'm a productivity coach as well. You know, I do some other things too, but I want to also dive in a little bit into productivity. So you mentioned you're a procrastinator. So how do you deal with that? How do you stay organized and productive and don't procrastinate?
I can always do better at this.
I'm good.
I definitely come from a long line of noble procrastinators. But what I find is, for me personally, to help me, I mean, when I'm not good at something, I usually procrastinate the most. So administration stuff, that is my own sort of Achilles heel there. And that means that I usually put it off to the last minute and I struggle with it. But for the other things like marketing or sales or writing, I find that really easy. So to help me kind of keep it cohesive, like for a lot of stuff, I focus on the launches for the selling and the marketing and the writing. And then for the administration stuff, I try to keep focused and be like, okay, what do I need to do to at least get by and make this work? But I can totally be better at this.
No, that's great that you're balancing things out. So what would, you know, if we were to be a fly on your shoulder, what would a typical day in the life of Hallie Gray look like?
I'm currently traveling, which I have to tell you is always a bad idea to try to work and travel.
Yes, I've never done that. Failed.
Yeah, totally. And it always sounds like a great dream, but unless you're staying in one place for like a continued amount of time, something about a human brain just can't handle that amount of change or chaos or something. I don't know, but it's hard to get a routine going. A typical day when I'm in New Zealand is that I will roll out of bed, usually braless, and sit on the couch and do all my work. And
that's the best way to work.
Yes, totally. Freedom, the sweet, sweet freedom.
Yes.
And then I'll have client calls during the morning, usually because in New Zealand, the time difference means that a lot of my clients want to work with me during the morning. And then I will either write some posts or try and work on the next launch. But I mean, a lot of the time, I mean, I'm very guilty of this, is trying to feel busy, even though I'm not, maybe. So I spend a lot of time refreshing Facebook or being on Facebook. And I do run a Facebook group, but I'm definitely guilty of refreshing it when everybody is asleep.
That's funny. Yes, everyone, I will link to Hallie's Facebook group. It's a great resource, and I'm in it too. So feel free to join and engage with everyone there. You'll get some great friends and opportunities. So you mentioned Facebook. How do you deal with distractions? This is a biggie.
I don't know if I am not. I'm not a good example for this. I actually usually am guilty of having like Seinfeld running, as well as having like three different pages open, working on a post, writing a page for a new product, or you know, like working on like two different things, writing on emails. So I can't say that personally I have any tips on this. I guess the best work I've done, but it hurts my brain a bit, is when I've only focused on one thing. And there's a couple of apps out there that you can do to use it. And there's something I'm trying to use, which is OmWriter, which...
Yes, I have used that before.
Yeah.
It is really nice, tranquil, peaceful.
It's super tranquil. Unfortunately, I really like chaos, so I'm not sure if it's going to work for me, but... I do see my work and my concentration improving when I focus on one task at a time, but I don't know, when you're at home alone all day, you kind of need that sound of people and laughter in the background. I don't know. I haven't figured this out yet, to be honest.
No, it's great. I applaud Seinfeld, and I love the fact that, you are a little bit owning this thing. I think a lot of us creative grasshoppers, we think we have to be perfect. And so we think, oh, I got to sit down and work only on this and not have any other distractions and not think about anything else. Well, that's not how it works. Mm. My best friend in college actually did her best study work with music blasting in her ears. Mm. I had absolutely no idea how she could work, but she needed chaos in order to work. And I think it's really important to just own it, figure out what's your style, and do it.
It's definitely not perfect. I think I work best when I have a launch coming up and like everything is needs to be done tomorrow, and so I'm up all night doing it. So for me, that's when my focus and all my like creative energy really comes out. It's really, I just get in the zone, and something about that course deadline really really sets me on fire, and I really thrive in that environment. But that general day-to-day stuff, I definitely lose focus. So that's why launches are so important to me and moving my business forward.
How do you structure your launches? How do you say, all right, how often do you have launches? How often do you set a deadline like that for yourself? I'm guessing it must be really exhausting to just pull all-nighters like that all the time, or to, you know, have these intense moments of focus. You need breaks in between them, right?
I know people do, but when I first started with my business, because I've only been running for like a year, maybe a little bit more, a couple months more, a month more.
That's awesome. Already 6 months booked out. Wow.
Yeah. I think right before the end of my first year, I was booked out 6 months. So that was pretty cool. Okay, I'm not sure if anybody else would say this when it comes to launching, but I launch when I feel like it. So I don't have plans for launches. I launch when I have a product in mind that I'm really excited about, and then I'll spend all night making it, or I'll spend like a week making it, and then I'll launch it and I'll sell it. So to me, I don't have plans for launches, because personally that would make me feel kind of resentful, I guess, or something. I don't know, some sort of emotion. So what I do is, when I get excited about an idea, and I've been talking to people a lot, like the sales page, either workshop or product I'm going to make, the reason why I'm going to make it is because I can see so many people need it, and I've been talking to people a lot about it, and it's kind of getting to the point where I'm like, okay, great, like, I know I can write a lot about this, I really like talking about it, so if I write it, it'll be something that I can use later on. And also, that's happened before for a lot of services and products. Like, for me, a launch is not about a planned and organized sort of schedule. For me, a launch is about an experiment that needs to be run right now. So if I've got an idea for a new service or product, I will literally write the sales page and I will launch it that week. And so that was quite exhausting. And now that I'm booked out 6 months in advance, it's kind of nice, because I was starting to get fatigued by all that hustling and selling. But for me, that's also what makes this exciting as a business. Like, I can turn my quiet periods into my busy periods just by offering a new service or a new product or a launch. And like, that to me is thrilling. That's adrenaline. That's great. I love that, exhilaration of selling something and launching something. So I do it when I feel like it. And I think that's the best, because I think a lot of people sit on launches and products because they're waiting for the right time, or they don't feel like it's ready. I say just launch it. I say launch it now.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And I think a lot of us get into business for this desire to be free, to do things when we feel like doing them, to not, you know, have to always obey the schedule of someone else. So I love that you are being so intuitive about this in a way. And so, you know, okay, when I feel like it, I'm going to launch. And what would you say then to people who think is not ready and struggle with that perfectionism and anxiety of, what if I put up the sales page and then I don't have it done, or the course doesn't end up good enough, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I find personally services are the best things to launch, because all they require is a sales page and the structure, and you can kind of launch it, and you can do a couple of people, and then you can refine it, and then you can go back to it again. And so it's the really only commitment there is your time. I find product launches personally less exciting, because you're right. You know, once you've written it down, and it's meant for so many different, well, it's supposed to be targeted at one person, but a product is so much, there are so many more variables. But what I would still say is, get a couple people who you wanted to buy it, give them it, work with them one-on-one on it, see what they say, add their notes in, add the feedback in, and then go ahead and do it. But then if you're going to do that, you know, you still have to put it out. You still have to launch it. You still have to, it's a test, it's an experiment. You're not going to be able to get better as a business owner or someone who's starting to launch things if you don't keep putting it out there and either failing. I mean, worst case scenario, if your launch doesn't work, then you just try it again. Worst case scenario, somebody gets your product and doesn't like it, you refund them their money, and then you offer them a free session so that you can talk to them and help them through what they need help with. worst case scenario, nobody likes it. You were from the mall and give like create like something free for them to do or help them out one by one. There's always some sort of solution for failure or unhappy clients. But you really need to go out there and do it because otherwise you're not going to have the data you need to improve your business.
That is brilliant. And it's so important. So listeners, keep all these things in mind because failure is not an end. It's just sort of a new beginning, a change, a shift, and it can open the door to a lot of different things. And Hallie, you said it amazingly well. It's super important to just set a deadline, light a fire under your butt, and get to work and put something out there.
Definitely.
Yeah, too many of us sit on our best ideas.
Yes, and the other thing I find really useful that's worked for me in terms of selling as well as for my clients is that if you put your sales page in front of people who you want to work with and you ask them for their feedback and advice, not only does that help you improve your sales page, but it also helps you get sales. So involving people in the improvement of your business is a great way of growing your business. And it gives you great data and it makes people feel good to be asked because everybody wants to be an expert.
Absolutely. You put it so well. So if you would meet a creative grasshopper in the road and you only had, 2 to 5 minutes to give them some big pieces of advice and tell them the most important things they should know about being successful in business and getting booked out, what would you tell them?
I think I would tell them that it's really hard for everybody and that self-doubt and financial struggle is a part of it, is a crucial part of it in the beginning for everyone. So to plan for that and to have a backup plan in place, and also that they need to not necessarily go against their creative grasshopper grain, but to pick something that they want to start with and then see how that evolves. Either just picking being a copywriter, picking doing marketing, picking graphic design, starting with it, starting to work with some clients and seeing if they like it, and then deciding, making a decision from there instead of making a decision in theory. And then I would recommend talking to people you want to work with and asking for their feedback.
Well, that is a great way to sum it all up. And I hope that creative grasshoppers take this and run with it because it's such great advice. So, Hallie, where can we find you?
I'm on evolveandsucceed.com, and I hang out in the Facebook group a lot.
Thank you so much, Hallie, for being a guest on our show. We loved having you around, and you were the best show opener.
Yes. Thank you so much for hosting me.